Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about a couple of new analyst notes on Tesla, one from Goldman Sachs, who just met with Tesla Investor Relations yesterday, and also a note from Alex Potter of Piper Sandler, got a little bit more information on the Hydra 9,000-ton gigapress. We've also got news from Bloomberg New Energy Finance. They've released their annual study on EVs, a couple other things on EV adoption, news from Ford and The Boring Company. All right, looking at the markets, pretty nice day today. NASDAQ up 2.7%, Tesla up 4.7%, did trail off a little bit towards the end of the day while the NASDAQ continued to rise. Not exactly sure what was going on there, but Tesla did close at $775 even. We'll start off with the Goldman Sachs note. They met with Tesla Investor Relations yesterday, so this is maybe the third or fourth note that we've seen come out of IR meetings. Most analysts seem to have left those meetings with relatively positive remarks, and that does seem to be the case here for Goldman Sachs as well in their note, but they have lowered their price target. Previously $1,200, now down to $1,000 per share. They say they left the meeting with four key takeaways. Number one, capacity expansion and profit potential of new factories, saying that Tesla commented that it plans to continue to expand over time. Probably don't need a meeting with IR to figure that one out, but they say that Berlin and Austin factories should benefit from an improved layout and efficiencies versus Fremont. So this is what we have seen emphasized coming out of all these meetings, it seems like. I think by itself, that information isn't really all that interesting because we kind of already knew that already, but the fact that it's being emphasized so heavily is interesting, and I'm guessing that's because of analysts asking questions about costs. They're all trying to figure out how to model gross margins for Tesla, but also for other companies, and really trying to get a good handle on how impactful rising cost of materials are going to be for Tesla and other businesses. So basically my interpretation is analysts are probably coming in with that question, and Tesla's saying, hey, well, you know, we've got these factories that are going to be way more efficient coming online, raising our volume. Both of those things are going to help with our cost of goods sold. Analysts have continually been underestimating Tesla's automotive gross margin excluding credits, and I think that will continue to be the case throughout the rest of this year. Anyway, Goldman Sachs continues on to say that, moreover, given that Tesla prices differently by region, we believe that longer-term margin potential at the Austin and Berlin factories will be attractive. They talk about Fremont's annual capacity being about 600,000 excluding supply constraints. That's a bit more than the 125,000 we've been seeing per quarter, but just a good reminder that Tesla has listed for quite a few quarters now Fremont's capacity as 600,000 per year on the earnings deck. Goldman Sachs does call out that Tesla aims to expand that over time, and then they say that, however, newer factories would likely be larger, and we think capable of scaling to around 1 million vehicles a year. Well, yes, I would definitely say that Shanghai is already there, basically. Analysts are extremely hesitant to believe that Tesla can scale those factories to 2 million vehicles per year, and until Tesla demonstrates that they can do that, that's going to hold analysts back from really putting in high growth numbers into their long-term forecasts. Last couple things on capacity, they say that the S and the X obviously below capacity, and the company has been working hard to ramp the new versions. They also believe Tesla's platform approach could allow it to offer different vehicle models in the long term, especially as it adds more capacity. Their second key takeaway, this ties into what I was just talking about, price and cost dynamics. They say Tesla reiterated commentary from their Q1 earnings call that higher vehicle pricing can offset estimated cost inflation that may occur over the next 6 to 12 months. Now, that doesn't mean that it will for sure. That would require Tesla's forecasting in a lot of different areas to be accurate. But with such a long order backlog, why would Tesla have not built themselves in a little bit of wiggle room? I think they probably did. Third point is on FSD. They just say that Tesla reiterated that data and learnings from FSD beta users support their target for a broader release of FSD for city streets to US customers by the year end. They talk a bit about data collection stuff that we've all talked about. And then their fourth point on Tesla Energy, they just say that they remain focused on expanding stationary storage. And as we know, they note that Tesla is in the process of expanding stationary storage capacity to 40 gigawatt hours per year. They wrap it up by saying, and this is one of the most interesting parts, that their 12-month price target of $1,000 is based on 10 times their applied enterprise value to sales for Q5 to Q8, so basically next year's sales. If you're not familiar, enterprise value is your market cap plus your debt minus your cash and cash equivalents. Any change to their debt or cash forecast would be pretty inconsequential to what that ratio ends up being for such a short time period from now. And yet, in April, so less than 2 months ago, Goldman Sachs wrote that the 12-month price target of $1,200 is based on 13 times our applied enterprise value to Q5 to Q8 sales. So in the last 2 months, they've actually raised their revenue forecast for 2023 by about $5 billion, and yet they have lowered their price target just because of the lower multiple, which, as we've talked about before, normally growing faster would yield a higher multiple. So in isolation, it's contradictory, but of course, it's just a reflection on the macroeconomic environment. It's probably pretty healthy for multiples to come down a bit, but when you have multiples coming down and then you also have, in my opinion, analysts underforecasting the actual growth that we're about to see, that creates really good investing opportunities. All right, a couple other things from Goldman Sachs I want to mention, and then we'll move on. They did also have a very lengthy note out about the battery industry. they're actually raising their battery pack price forecast for 2022 through 2025 based on the forecast from their commodities team. They say that the battery metal bull market appears to have peaked, yet even with a decline, it's still going to end up above where they'd previously forecast, hence the increase to their forecast. And in general, they expect battery prices to increase overall the next couple of years before scale and the associated declining cost curve is able to overwhelm the higher prices they're forecasting for raw materials. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then they also had an interesting chart here on their forecast for lithium prices, which they don't expect to have peaked yet. They're expecting that for the fourth quarter. But from there, they do seem to expect it to decline rather rapidly and return to prices around the level that we were seeing a couple years ago by late 2024 into 2025. The other thing they noted that I thought was interesting to pass along, there's been a lot of discussion on solid-state batteries. They say that their tracking suggests many companies are now working on solid-state batteries, testing diversified technology routes. Still, multiple challenges exist, and mass production looks less likely before the late 2020s. So, sorry, Toyota. All right, the other analyst update that we have is from Alex Potter of Piper Sandler. Just a quick news flash here from them. They haven't changed their price target or anything, still $1,035. Still overweight on the stock, but they have recently been tracking wait times for Model 3 and Model Y in the US, Germany, and China. Today, they noticed a significant spike in the wait times for the Model Y performance in Germany, which has now been pushed out to, at the earliest, October to December, about a 10-week increase from before. Not that the wait times have been perfect indicators, but as long as Piper Sandler's been tracking this, it seems like Tesla has been updating them relatively regularly. So it is interesting to see that spike in demand, but I don't think there's much we can learn from this because it's difficult to know if that's demand-related or just production-related at Giga Berlin. So not much to learn from it now, but as we learn more about Giga Berlin's production, then we can come back to this data point and be a little bit more informed on what was going on and how that might reflect on things moving forward. So I'm glad they're keeping an eye on it, and we will as well. All right, next up, we've got a little bit more information on the Idra 9,000-ton Gigapress, which we know Idra is presenting next week at their open house event. That leaves the question of when that machine might actually arrive at Tesla, and a listener passed along some information that Idra had previously published about their shipping lead times, and luckily for us, they actually gave a very detailed breakdown about this process. So they say when the Gigapress is finished, it's disassembled to be packed. That operation takes at least 2 weeks. They obviously have very special packing procedures for this, and then once they're ready to transport it, the time there depends entirely on port. They say that they've got three that they ship out of, and they say, for example, the minimum shipping time to the East Coast of the US, so New York, that would be about 16 days, at least 24 days for Houston, obviously most relevant for us, and a maximum of 45 to 50 days for shipping to China. So we're at least 38 days so far, and then they say when the Gigapress arrives at its destination, it's reassembled by specialized teams, and the lead time is approximately 1 month. So all in all, you're probably looking at least 2.5 months, and because this is such a large Gigapress, probably a little bit longer from whenever Idra's ready to start disassembling it, which at the earliest would be mid-June. So absolute best case for Tesla would be having this ready to go at Giga Texas sometime in September. Probably add a couple of months of buffer on that because we're not even entirely sure if the Gigapress 9,000 ton is ready to go yet. But it would seem to, at this point, at least be on track for facilitating Cybertruck production in the first half of next year. We'll see if everything else can keep up with that, but nice to be able to track this progressing. All right, next up, we've got a few general EV updates. First, from Bloomberg New Energy Finance, they have published their annual long-term electric vehicle outlook today. I think we all kind of know the trends here, so we don't need to spend a ton of time going through this, but something that is interesting that they have presented, they feel like this year is going to be the peak year for number of ICE vehicles on the road. I think we all know that we've already reached peak ICE vehicle sales, but the entirety of the vehicle fleet is a different matter. And Bloomberg says that right now there's about 1.25 billion passenger vehicles on the road. Obviously, EVs are currently a very small part of that fleet. But with the ever-growing percent of EVs for new sales and the retirement of ICE vehicles, Bloomberg's data is showing them that the internal combustion engine vehicle fleet will never get any bigger than it is today. And that is a huge milestone. That doesn't necessarily mean Tesla's original mission is fully accomplished, but Tesla has played such a massive role on this. I was just thinking the other day, it would be so depressing, the state of the electric vehicle market, if this had all just been left up to legacy auto to solve. All right, the other thing we've got here on EVs in general is another study on EV adoption. We talked a little bit about the one from JD Power last week, but this time we've got an update from Ernst & Young, which has published their Mobility Consumer Index study for 2022. Probably the most interesting thing to me was their update on how EV preferences have changed compared with previous surveys. They found that on the global level, for the first time, over half the consumers they surveyed who intend to buy a car in the next 24 months say they will choose an EV or a hybrid vehicle. It's insane to me that they even include that. Those are so wildly different, but If you do look at the underlying data, you can see that they do break out EVs and hybrids, and they show that plug-in hybrids and hybrids basically have maintained the same level of interest over the last couple of years, but fully electric vehicles are on the rise, so interest going from 7% in 2020 all the way up to 20% now in 2022. Interestingly, the data is less favorable in the United States, only about 35% saying that they are going to buy a hybrid or an EV, and the interest in EV actually declined a little bit from last year. I mentioned with the JD Power survey that the increase that they noted wasn't really all that significant, and we're seeing even worse results here from the Ernst & Young survey. It's interesting to see, and it paints a completely different picture than what we see from Tesla's order backlog. But when you look at something like the Chevy Bolt, where they just had these huge price cuts, maybe that's more of an indicator and Tesla just kind of standing out as its own thing. We'll see. I would definitely expect these numbers to increase. I mentioned plug-in hybrids there. We do have a bit of news on plug-in hybrids. I've mentioned this before as a possibility, but Autocar has learned that the European Union is likely to change how emissions are calculated for plug-in hybrid vehicles, significantly impacting how plug-in hybrids would affect fleet-wide emissions from automakers. They say that as these changes are implemented, a plug-in hybrid that today measures at about 50 grams per kilometer of CO2 emitted would change to about 125 grams per kilometer by 2027. So a 150% increase on how their emissions are calculated. That would be very bad news for those that were planning on plug-in hybrids to ease their transition into a higher weighted EV portfolio as emission standards become stricter. So I think that's good. It'll put pressure on their ICE vehicles to be even more efficient, stop selling as many big vehicles, hopefully push them harder into full EVs, and worst case, well, might have to buy some more regulatory credits from Tesla. All right, next up, we've got some really interesting comments from Ford CEO Jim Farley. He's kind of coming out swinging here at an annual investor conference. He said about Ford that, quote, "We've got to go to non-negotiated price. We've got to go 100% online. There's no inventory at dealerships. It goes directly to the customer, and 100% remote pickup and delivery," end quote. I'm sure the dealers loved hearing that, but Farley went on to say apparently that he sees the physical locations of dealers as a huge opportunity to push an edge over competitors, but that the current stores will have to radically evolve. Dealers can do it, he said, but the standards are going to be brutal. So no inventory directly to customer, 100% remote pickup and delivery, and yet these physical locations are going to be some huge competitive advantage. I'm not sure how that mashes up. And I think automakers might have a bit of rose-colored glasses here when they look at Tesla, because there is a lot of advantage to pricing vehicles on a more micro level. That's part of why we saw Tesla do a lot of incentives at times in the past. That gave them some flexibility because demand isn't always going to perfectly line up with allocation. Localized pricing helps with that, so to try to move away from that model that you already have established, I'm not sure that's going to be as big of a win as they might like to think that it would be. But hey, if they want to move in that direction, I don't think anyone's going to complain. It's definitely a win for consumers. Anyway, Farley also said that Ford wants to cut back dramatically on ad spending for EVs, and he actually said, quote, "If you ever see Ford Motor Company doing a Super Bowl ad on our electric vehicles, sell the stock," end quote. Well, it's an admirable goal. I think we've seen a lot of Ford EV ads so far, but we'll see if moving forward they can try to wean themselves off of that sweet, sweet advertising. All right, last couple of things here. First, we've got an update on the Boring Company. Bloomberg today had a report on some public documents that they have obtained discussing some of the Boring Company's aspirations in Texas. They say that over the last year, company representatives have pitched 8 projects to state officials, or at least 8 projects with a variety of different use cases from the standard automotive tunnel that we have come to know, to even a walking tunnel to ease some logistics for some high school football in Texas, which is a very big deal. They also had an interesting note on Hyperloop, which we know Boring Company has recently mentioned, but they say that a company presentation that was marked as confidential from June 2021 said that, quote, "All loop tunnels are designed for the loading and sealing requirements to accommodate Hyperloop, allowing increases in speeds from Loop's 150 miles per hour to Hyperloop's 600 plus miles per hour," end quote. So I expect we'll hear more about that in the future, but clearly something the Boring Company has continually had in mind. All right, last quick thing, just want to say a really quick thank you to those that did sign up on ShareLoft. I'm really excited by some of the discussion that has been so active on ShareLoft so far. Already some good discussion on Tesla options, SpaceX investing, lithium mining, cryptocurrency, kind of the things I was hoping for, so excited to see it. And then just a quick FYI, I am going to be sending out my Tesla financial model to annual members later tonight. I'm actually going to record the accompanying video to that to explain it right after wrapping this up, which we will do now. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. Also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, June 3rd episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.